Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast. This is Jordan Schusterman, all by my lonesome. I am recording this in the past, last week, because what you are about to hear, this episode of Baseball Barbacast on this Monday, was all recorded in the past, because as I record this several days before my wedding, I've made the, I think, understandable executive decision. We will not be recording anything on Monday, but we did want to, of course, deliver some content to this feed. And so we recorded a mailbag. You heard some of that last week on Wednesday. We have a couple more fantastic questions that we answered last week that we thought were some fun conversations. So what this episode is going to be the first half. You're going to hear some more mailbag answers. And then in the second half, you are going to hear a couple more conversations that we had back at the Futures game. Two ones that you did not hear, the extended versions yet, that we thought were especially entertaining and enjoyable. So before we get to those, I'll intro those after the mailbag. But that is the general plan. We will, of course, be back on Wednesday with the normal episode responding to all the stuff that has happened in the past week. But until then, we hope you understand and enjoy this Monday edition, which is a little bit different. So without further ado, I am going to send it over to some of the mailbag questions that we answered recently. Again, as always, you can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. We've been getting so many great questions and comments and ridiculous hypotheticals that we look forward to answering in future episodes as well. So keep those emails coming. But without further ado, here are some mailbag questions, and then I'll introduce our guests after that.
Our next question is from Sam. Sam says, hey guys, not the first time, but it's been a long time. The last time we talked on the phone during a CFBBQ road trip, mainly about Rob Kaminsky. Quick break. This is something that Jordan and I used to do in our younger years, is we would like go on our Snapchat and we would say, DM us your number. We'll call you in the car. And we used to just call random people.
Yes.
On road trips and just talk to them for like 20 minutes.
It was great. And then one of my favorite things we ever did. Cause yeah, we were just, this is when it was like, oh, well, we have like 6 hours to drive. Right. Like we're bored. We don't want to listen to the same playlist over and over. Let's just call people that follow us and ask them how their day's going.
It was like one-on-one. It was like one-on-one call in radio.
It was amazing. And I would love to maybe replicate that sometime in the future. Anyway, Sam says, here's a deadline-related question. Do you have any oddly specific trade deadline memories of exciting or disappointing deadlines that felt consequential at the time but are completely inconsequential now? I remember congregating with my brothers and some friends to watch the coverage of the 2006 deadline and being very annoyed that the only move the Red Sox were rumored to make was acquiring Kip Wells, who they then didn't even get. He went to Texas. I can never forget Kip Wells now because my 12-year-old self was so mad about his brief association with the Red Sox. Then he has a bonus question, which I also want to answer. But let's talk about the deadline thing first.
Yeah. I mean, when I think about deadline moves, the one that always stands out for me, Jake Mintz and Jordan Schusterman are driving through Western Utah in a 2008 Toyota Highlander towards the Bonneville Salt Flats. If you don't know what that is, Google it.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And in 2016. We get a ping on our phones breaking the day after the All-Star game, to be clear. So it was not really the trade deadline yet, right, but it stands out my brain.
It was the day or 2 days after. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Drew Pomerantz from the Padres to the Red Sox for Anderson Espinosa, who at the time was a big deal pitching prospect. And I remember pulling over to the side of the highway in Utah to be like, this is huge. Espinosa for Pomerantz. No way. And now it's like, whatever. And like Pomerantz ended up back on the Padres.
Right.
And, you know,
Pomerantz, that stands out in my head. Pomerantz is apparently on the 60-day IL for the Padres, has not pitched in the big league since 2021. That is a great one. That is a great one. That's like a more extreme version of our reaction to the Khalil Watson trade, just because it was like this prospect. And Espinosa was, it's a little bit more complicated story, but that's a great one. Yeah, I vaguely remember that. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, now it's interesting. You know, I certainly remember the more recent ones because we've been working them. But I mean, I remember Yoenis getting traded to the Red Sox. I remember all the Yoenis trades pretty well.
Yoenis getting traded to the Red Sox, we were staying in my uncle's apartment in New York City in 2014, and we were staying in my cousin's beds, and they were like 8 and 9 year old yes. girls. And so the beds were yes. like too short for us. Mm-hmm. And I remember waking up a little hungover mm-hmm. at 9 and you just were on your laptop.
Like, I was just like, you're Red like, Sox.
No, I just remember you went, Yoenis got traded. And I was like, what? You're like, Yoenis got
this
traded.
Is also remember, like at this point, we are, of course, the biggest Yoenis fans, but this is right. This is 2014. Like we probably yeah. have like 3,000 Twitter followers or something.
Yeah,
which is a lot at the time.
And a lot now,
that's
a
great.
Say.
No, I remember that super well. Wow. Yeah. And then we proceeded to pretend that never happened. One quick thing here, because Sam also adds a question. It says, bonus question, most ill-advised or ill-fated jersey or jersey purchase. Mine still remains a Daniel Bard Red Sox jersey 2010. I saw Brian Mann's jersey at Camden Yards yesterday, which got me thinking about this. Congrats to both of you on your wedding-related simchas. Wedding-related. I mean, they're it's a wedding.
A wedding-related simcha would be like running a catering business that gets a huge contract.
Simcha means celebration in Hebrew. Thank you yeah. to Sam. I'm not even going to answer his question. I just want to rant for a second.
Oh, I have one.
Well, you answer his question, then I'll rant.
So this is a very embarrassing story about myself.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I just remembered and I know what you're going to say.
I don't think I've ever told this story in public, but I think now's a good time.
It took me a second. I was like, what?
Okay. So I think it was 2018, maybe 2017, 17 or 18.
Yeah.
So Bruce Maxwell kneels for the anthem. Okay. And I remember I was like out in New York City. It was like a Friday or Saturday night and he kneeled. And I was convinced it was going to be a huge deal. National news. And this is when like everyone, every conservative in America was complaining about Colin Kaepernick. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, yo, Bruce Maxwell's going to be like famous. He's going to be like on every page of every newspaper in America. Like, what do we do? And so the next morning I woke up and I bought a custom Bruce Maxwell jersey because I was trying to be a good little ally. And then he was out of baseball. He was out. Well, he's still playing somewhere in Mexico, but
still in Mexico.
And then he was out of baseball.
To be fair to you, like it was, it's not that it wasn't a big story at the time, but the staying power was the opposite of that.
I really thought it was going to be like a cultural moment that was going to live on forever. And the fact, maybe it should have been. And the fact that it wasn't maybe speaks a lot about baseball, and this is a different podcast episode, but then it also like parlayed its way. Didn't he pull a gun on a delivery man?
Yeah, he's had some off the field issues since then. But
we're pro Bruce. I'm pro Bruce.
No, for sure. I mean, he's still, again, he's in the Mexican League. But here's the thing. That's actually weirdly a perfect transition to my rant, okay?
Well, I just want to say.
Because Jake.
It's a weird purchase. It doesn't age poorly. What ages poorly is how convinced I was. You remember, like I was.
Oh, I remember it extremely well. Yeah. And by the way, at the time, even as much as we wanted to be like, yeah, like hell yeah, Bruce Maxwell, everyone at the MLB offices was like, dude, relax. To Jake,
I wore my Bruce Maxwell jersey into work.
Okay, here's
too much. I was doing too much.
That is a perfect transition, though. Okay, because. What did you just describe, Jake? You just said that you were able to wake up the next day and order a Bruce Maxwell jersey.
Oh, okay? Man, I know exactly what you're going to say.
Okay. And regardless of the intentions, the motivations, and Jake's belief that, you know, he was going to be an American hero forever.
Me, not Bruce Maxwell.
That action that Jake took, which is ordering a jersey of a player who is not good or famous, is impossible in the year 2023.
Heinous.
It is a task that is not possible in the year 2023. Now, if I am wrong, I need you to email me at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com and tell me why I'm wrong. Because from what I can tell, Jake, in the last couple years, jerseys have been murdered. By the current apparatus that runs MLBShop.com.
Fanatics.
And to be clear about
catch
that,
these hands.
Yes. This is so frustrating. Do jerseys exist at ballparks of more than just one player? I do believe yes.
Yes. Now,
custom jerseys are a different conversation, right? But on MLB.shop.com, you can basically get at max one or two jerseys of a team, of a player.
And that is ridiculous. There is no way that we should, that it should be impossible to get the jersey of even like the fifth best player on the team to the degree that it has become. And as for people like us, of course, that is a huge part of our wardrobe and a huge part of our fandom is a jersey option where you can show I like this player and I don't need to spend $250 for a jersey. That is the easiest. It is such a great thing for fans to be able to have. And Jake, you know, such a big part of our experience seeing, and this should apply to jerseys too, is being out in public and walking past someone on the street and seeing the front of a jersey or a jersey. And I say, oh, look, Jake, we're about to walk past someone with a Brewers jersey. Oh, I can't wait to see who's on the back, who's on the back. And, you know, sometimes it is Prince Fielder or Christian Yelich or someone. But then sometimes, you know, It's the, you could never possibly fathom. Sometimes it is the backup catcher,
Zach Duke.
Sometimes it's a reliever, and we should have the opportunity to have and wear those jerseys. It drives me crazy, and I don't know when or how this will ever get fixed, but I hope it does because it is a tragedy in the memorabilia space, and it pisses me off so much. Thank you.
I agree, and it is such a money grab too.
Oh my God.
It's like you got to buy the jersey because here's the thing. You still can buy a jersey of anybody you want online. The custom jersey capability is what has been taken away from us.
And just the variety in general. You know, it's so bad. Okay. Anyway. All right. Move on. What's our next question?
Let's do one
and bring in producer Chris. I think it's time to bring in producer Chris.
All right, producer Chris, be ready. This is from Adeline. Adeline says, dear Jake and Jordan, Travis Bazana is really tearing it up on the Cape Cod League. I've been watching Cape games on YouTube, but I was supposed to be doing homework. Good job. And the dude is a stud. What are the chances he goes first overall next year in the draft? Obviously, he's got some stiff competition in JJ Weatherholt, Nick Kurtz, Jack Caglione, and others. Love this podcast and also the shock factor and wish all of you all the best. Sincerely, Adeline. Chris Tyler, where are you from, man?
Australia.
And where is Travis Bazana from, Chris Tyler?
Australia, but a different part of Australia to where I'm from. Oh. But still Australia nonetheless.
Okay, where are you from? Where is he from?
I'm from Melbourne. He's from Sydney.
That's the same to me. Travis Bazana is a rising junior at Oregon State University, where he is very good at hitting and not great at defense, but we'll work on that.
Who cares? That's not why you get drafted. You don't get drafted because of your defense.
What is your experience with Travis Bazana?
Not much.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. Jordan, sending it to you.
Well, the reason why it's not just about Travis Bazana, who we are getting asked about, is also Curtis Meade, who made his major league debut over the weekend. He's been a top prospect in the Rays organization for the last few years. He is from Adelaide. So I don't know if you have more ties to Adelaide versus Sydney, but
the Adelaide boy.
Either way, the point is that the history of Australian baseball in the majors is way more pitcher friendly than it is hitter friendly, particularly in recent years, of course, with the likes of guys like Liam Hendricks. And because of that, we have not seen as many hitters. We have also especially not seen as many hitters who go and play Division I baseball who are straight out of high school, who are very, very, very good and possible first round picks. And that is where Travis Bazana comes in, because Travis Bazana, in tearing it up in the Cape League and being one of the best hitters in the RIP Pac-12 over the last two seasons, has a very, very good chance to not just be a first round pick in 2024, but to be a top five pick in 2024. And this is just very exciting because Curtis Meade now is going to be, you know, hopefully a big part of the Rays' future. And like Chris, like this is, we got to get, now here's the thing. Great example. You should be able to get a Curtis Meade jersey. That shouldn't be a problem. You should be able to get one. But guess what? You can't, and you probably won't ever be able to. So sorry to tell you that. And I know that they make these custom. I know Jake, you sent me this link to these custom shirts that they're not jerseys. They don't look like a replica of a jersey. It's you can get a name and number, but it looks so janky and it makes it look like more of a ripoff than it actually is. I want real jerseys, and you need to get a Curtis Meade one. And if someone can tell us how we can get one for Chris, I will purchase that for him.
Chris, good does Curtis Meade need to be for people in Australia to give a shit about him?
4%.
Very, very, very good. There'll be a small subsection. There is a baseball community in Australia, but it's very, very small. It's not as big as like the NBA community or the NFL mm-hmm. community back at home. Like mm-hmm. you really have to be a big baseball fan to really care and to know about Curtis Meade and to know about these guys who are playing in the majors. It's unfortunate, but baseball is just not a particularly big thing here, which is strange because when I started playing baseball in Australia, I realized how many people actually played, right? Because I lived about 40 minutes outside of Melbourne and within outside of the city itself. So it was still Melbourne, but it was about 40 minutes outside of the city. But within a 10 to 15 minute drive of my house, there were probably 6, 7, 8 different baseball clubs, all with 3, 4, 5 different teams. So a lot of people play. A lot of people find it fun. I think it's mainly cricketers playing in the off season because winter sure. baseball is much more of a thing than summer baseball in Melbourne, at least. So a lot of people do play, but for the general public, for something like SEN, which is the 24-hour sports radio station that I used to work for them to give anyone coverage who's doing well in baseball, you're going to have to be like a everyday sort of player.
That makes sense. I will say, though, I do think Bezzana, not that I should tell you how it's going to work in Australia, I do feel like if Bezzana goes first overall, which is unlikely, but like if he goes in the top 5, I think that the notion of going that early in a draft could maybe help it
become... it'd be a story.
Yeah, versus Curtis Meade, who's like kind of worked his way up through the minors and it's harder to follow and really understand what it means to be a prospect. To be like a top 5 pick kind of, I feel like, would hit more on a headline versus being like Curtis Meade is in the futures game, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it'd certainly be a story if he goes top 5, but then... once he has to battle it out in the minors for a couple of years, then you sort of forget about him, and then maybe he gets caught up and it becomes a new story again. But for it to have the staying power to where you're talking about these players, you know, every couple of weeks or something like that, you're really going to have to crack a rotation and be putting up some decent numbers. Because unfortunately, because I love baseball, but no one, it's definitely not in the top 5, 6, 7 different sports that people care about.
Makes sense.
The wider public cares about in Australia.
Well, we're rooting for Trav. Mm. Travis and Curtis are gonna carry Australian baseball in the next WBC. That is for sure. Jake, thank you, Chris. What is our next question?
Let's do one more. Going pretty long. Ryan. Two more. Ryan on Weird Players. Hey guys, as an Angel fan, watching Ohtani just get walked all the time, it made me think about two extreme hitters. One hitter hits a home run every 5 plate appearances, but strikes out every other at bat, finishing with a sweet stat line of 200, 200, 800. The other walks every single at bat and has this sweet stat line. 0, 0, 0, 1,000, 0, 0, 0. Which batter would get paid more on the open market? I feel like the home run hitter would be better, but I think the everyday, every walk guy would add more value to an already good team. What do you think?
So the math here stated this way is fascinating and very fun. But another outcome of the players he is describing is somebody that is literally hitting like 120 home runs, right, in a season. So that would be pretty difficult for a lot of teams to ignore. However, you're comparing that with somebody reaching base, you know, 700 times or 650 times. So what's more valuable for your team? I don't know. I think that the strikeouts, I think one homer every 5 plate appearances is that's close enough to one a game that like, that's, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, you're
I
think also breaking the all-time, you're breaking Barry Bonds' single season record.
That's what I said. Yeah.
He's 120 home runs. That's huge for marketing.
Yeah. And really, like, it's interesting because if this player is guaranteed, if it is literally every 5 and it's basically timed out that way and it's not like random within every 5, you know what I mean? Like, if he could hit homers in back-to-back plate appearances, but then that would mean that he would then strike out in his next 8. Versus if it's literally like a rotation, like every 5 exact plate appearances, he's hitting a home run. That would make it also very interesting. But as far as who would be more valuable, I mean, again, there's just so many home runs that it's pretty difficult to turn down. But I don't know. There is obvious. This is also kind of a math problem that probably could be solved.
The other thing about the home run guy is like he comes up. It's a strikeout at bat. Comes up, bases loaded, two outs. Like you're pinch hitting it. You know.
Well, right. So I don't know how you manage that if it's that locked into that degree. At the same time, no matter how good, no matter how many he reaches base every time, why am I going to the ball yard to watch Mr. I walk every time?
True.
You know? I mean, maybe if he's stealing bags, right? But otherwise, yeah. Like that's not a fan favorite at all. So that's a good question, though. I'm not excited to watch that guy though. That would be, I guess, my point. Versus the guy that I know is going to homer basically every time I'm there.
Last question. This is from Jackson. Hey, Jake and Jordan, I've had a question floating around in my head for a few weeks now. It all started during the Blake Snell interview in which he revealed he had no idea what WRC Plus was. While I am a mutual Blake Snell hater like Jake, this statement became more important since Snell has been the best pitcher on the planet since he did that interview. Did Blake learn what weighted runs created plus means and implemented it in his pitching philosophy? Or has he not changed a thing and just gone on a now seemingly normal Blake Snell run of good starts? I'd been on the latter, as would I. This leads to the obvious question, what players would benefit from learning about StatCast metrics and who should ignore Saber metrics? I think the obvious answer is Eric Hosmer at his ground ball rate. While I'm sure someone in the last 3 years has told him to lift the ball, it clearly has not been a priority. Hope you guys have fun with this concept. I love the live show in Baltimore and talking to you guys. Thanks, Jackson, a very happy O's fan. Jackson Holiday, thank you for the email.
Jackson Holiday, the happiest O's fan. This is interesting because we had a conversation about Snell and, you know, should it be surprising that players don't know stats that we use all the time now? No, it shouldn't. But his example of Eric Hosmer, like, this is kind of a different question, right? Because understanding what the stat is and knowing that it is a flaw is very different than fixing it. Now, it's possible Eric Hosmer has not actively tried to lift the ball more, but there's also a chance he cannot. And that's the thing, right?
Right.
Blake Snell, knows. You say, hey, Blake Snell, your walk rate is really high. Well, he knows that, right? But if you pull up a more advanced stat that says Blake Snell's command sucks, that's not like there's certain metrics and things within a player's profile that can actively be fixed or changed. Maybe that's the spin axis. I mean, then we're getting into goofier stuff, but like those are more real things that players can change. The outcome, you know, the stats, like if they know I'm giving up too many walks, I'm giving up too many home runs, like whatever, they know that. They might not know the exact number to calculate it. They do know it. And so it's more of a question of what do they actually need to know that they can change versus should know for the sake of being a baseball human in 2023.
Yeah, so for pitching, it's a lot of release point, pitch mix, location, yeah. Things like that.
Pitch mix, how you're attacking hitters. Hey, dude, your fastball in 1-1 counts against lefties is getting murdered. So stop throwing that, right?
Right.
That is an actionable change.
Whereas Blake Snell not knowing what WRC plus means, I genuinely think that doesn't matter one freaking bit.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have any real impact on him. Now, what he needs to know is how is Chris Taylor against sliders? Mm-hmm. Right? How is CJ Cron against changeups? Those are the things that he needs to have an understanding. Or even like, how does my fastball play against a hitter with short arms? Mm-hmm. Right? That's way more important than outcome stats that he would have.
That's for us. That's for our fun to analyze and compare players and to say, this guy sucks and this guy's better than this guy. Like, we don't, that's not the player. That is very much not the player's job. And so it can be funny to us when the players who we ascribe numbers to, you know, it's one thing for the Snell WRC plus example, right? But like, it'd be a different thing if, you know, Juan Soto didn't know what OPS plus was. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't, right? But like that is a very quintessential stat that explains why Juan Soto is a hitting god, right? Is OPS plus. Does he need to know that? No, but that would be at least funnier. Whereas to your point, Snell knowing WRC plus or not in advanced hitting statistics means absolutely nothing. We can still laugh about it, means absolutely nothing.
This is former PGA Tour winner Smiley Kaufman, host of The Smiley Show, a SiriusXM podcast. You want to know what I love about golf? I get to talk to some really cool people. I get to walk the fairways of the best courses in the world with the best players in the world, and I get to share it with you every single week. Listen to The Smiley Show right now on Stitcher, Pandora, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's Smiley, S-M-Y-L-I-E.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Thank you again to everyone who emailed us. You can email us, baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Keep those coming. Second half of this show is going to be a fragment of two conversations that we had back in Seattle at the Futures game. You heard bits and pieces of them when we posted our Futures game special back at the time, but we wanted to include a couple more of these here today. The first one you're going to hear is Diamondbacks shortstop prospect Jordan Lawler. Of course, one of the top prospects in the sport, someone who I think we could see in the big leagues very soon. And we didn't get to include much of that in our last podcast with the Futures Gamers. So first, you're going to hear from him. And then after that, you're going to hear from probably my favorite personality that we talked to during the Futures game. And that is Victor Scott from the St. Louis Cardinals. Victor Scott, someone who you heard us have a conversation with him last time about being one of the fastest players in minor league baseball. You know, he's already up to now over 70 stolen bases this season, which is just ridiculous. He's, you know, coming for 80, 90, maybe 100 by the end of the year. So you heard us talk about him being fast, but he's also really an interesting trajectory, a Georgia boy that ended up playing at West Virginia University. So you're going to hear some funny stuff about how that happened and some Morgantown specific jokes and whatnot. So we think you'll enjoy that. We think you'll enjoy Jordan and Victor. So I will get out of the way and hope you enjoy these conversations with Jordan Lawler and Victor Scott. Jordan Lawler, Arizona Diamondbacks. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you, sir?
I'm great. I'm great. Just got off the flight, but I'm happy to be here.
How was the flight? Flight was okay?
Yeah, it was long, but it was good.
It was good.
Yeah, I'm telling you, other guys have had longer flights to get here.
I bet.
You probably know this is as far as it gets for a lot of these prospects coming here. Now, you told us you're coming in from Springfield, playing in the Texas League. You are currently playing for the Amarillo Sod Poodles. And as you know, Jake and I, we've grown in this game, loving minor league baseball, and we're so desensitized to it. All these crazy minor league team names, we're just like, oh yeah, of course. Oh, we got these, and we got the Trash Pandas, and we got the Cannonballers. That's all normal to us. You are a poodle. You're a sod poodle, a soddy. You're a sod poodle. Like, when you first get there, is there any amount, like, it's just like, is it normal for you guys too? Or is there a part of you when you're putting your jersey on every day, you're like,
I'm a poodle.
I'm a poodle. All right.
I mean, that jersey's all right. But then we have the calf fry jersey, which is even more interesting.
Okay, I'll have to. I'll do some research. The cow testicle. Yeah, yeah. Again, we're always pushing the boundaries.
So that one's a little interesting.
The cow testicles, it's like, what are we trying to push here, right? Like, who asked for this?
I think we're trying to push cow testicles.
I guess
we're trying to push. I'm not an expert in the matter, but that seems like the deal. I have a million questions.
All right, we'll do this. Jordan Lawler, you have been good at baseball for quite some time, right? It seems like that's a good place to start. When did you know you were good at baseball? Because now we know.
Yeah.
I think we're pretty sure at this point you're good. But there was a time when maybe you didn't know you were good at baseball, but so then when did that change?
Yeah, I mean, I never can answer that question. I don't ever have a pinpoint answer to that, but I mean, my last year in Visalia, that kind of proved to me. I was like, okay, I can do this.
Okay, so not even until then.
Yeah. I mean, I knew a little bit, but like that was when you actually pro ball.
You're like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
so you weren't even convinced at any point during high school before you were a first round pick. You're like, I am good enough to get the opportunity.
I always felt like I was a step ahead, you know.
Okay,
on the summer circuits and
yes,
stuff.
Yes.
But as far as pro ball, once you actually get into the meat of it, you know, mm-hmm. like it's a little different, but. Mm-hmm. Once you can do that, prove it to yourself, you have that mm-hmm. confidence, mm-hmm. and that just allows you to play the highest level.
So I want to ask you about the summer circuit, because mm-hmm. a lot of the guys who were here went through that. Mm-hmm. as young as 13, 14 years old. You spend your whole summer playing showcase ball, travel ball to get scouted. When you're going through that type of competitive atmosphere, how do you make sure that you're not losing the love of it, that you're not getting worn out, that the it doesn't become a job? Because now it's a job, and you understand that. But when you're 13 and 14, I imagine that that type of pressure is something that is very difficult for a teenager to handle. So when you look back on that experience, how do you think you were able to stay grounded through it all?
I think it just starts with the people you have around you. So I came up with the same summer ball team from 9U up until 18. So I had the same core guys that I started playing baseball with. And those friendships obviously keep you coming back, and all the time off the field you spend together, I think that translates pro ball too. Like these guys I have on my team, we're hanging out outside the field, we're having fun. So it's in both fields of the game. Like you're just hanging out and having a good time.
Is that weird by the time you're 16, 17 that, you know, you look across, you're playing catch, you're like, I knew you when you were eight. Yeah, like that's wild. So really the same group, like how many guys? I assume wasn't the whole team was the same all the way up, but like what was the core group?
Probably,
and I assume these are still some of your best friends.
Four or five, yeah.
Okay.
And they all went on to play.
Yeah, where are they at now? We can shout out some people. Like who are we talking about here?
Couple were at like DBU, and then some other D1s around the country. But yeah, I'd say probably one of my best friends is at DBU.
Love that.
Okay, there you go. So now you were committed to Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. Do you ever think now, again, obviously off to this great start in a pro career, no necessarily regrets, but do you ever think like, man, what would I be doing in the SEC? Both, I think about this from, it's easy for me as just like a total dork who can never imagine being this good at baseball, like, damn, the numbers I'll be putting up, these juice balls. You know, I get to use metal bats again. Oh, man, this would be crazy. So that's the very, you know, goofy guy. But, like, you ever think about that? What would it be like if you were at Vanderbilt?
I have, yeah. Especially watching the College World Series. Like, okay. I went.
Yeah, so are you still, like, a fan? Like, you still watch? And
I
you,
do, yeah. I try to follow along more so College World Series just because I was there, the year before I got drafted just to check it out.
Oh, atmosphere. So you went to Omaha?
When they played Mississippi State, yeah. I was at the second game, first and second game of that series.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, it was pretty crazy atmosphere. And I was like, I have to watch this.
In 2021? Yeah. That would have been like when it was Rocker and Leiter. Mm-hmm. And,
yeah.
Wow.
So, right. And what do you, I mean, do you think about it from a competitive standpoint? Like, do you imagine, you know, we talked to some guys, we talked to Drew Gilbert in here earlier, right? Being on that Tennessee team and then going to play in minor league baseball, you know, you just go straight in to the minors and deal with that. You think about that from the crowd and the pressure, like what elements of it do you kind of think the most about?
Yeah, honestly, it's hard to say just because I wasn't there. Yeah. So it's hard for me to speak on something I wouldn't know. But yeah, I've heard stories from my teammates and everything. But yeah, it's hard for me to comment on that.
Honestly. Yeah. Do you still have like an affinity for Vanderbilt? Like I said, do you feel it's like there. You still are watching them closer than any other school? It's I guess there, you're, and you're friends at DBU though, so you know we're keeping
the
an eye
answer
on that.
For what would he be doing if he was still in the SEC would be running polls for Corbs.
5 a.m. Wake up. Yeah.
That is the answer to that
Omaha
question.
Omaha Challenge, all that stuff.
Omaha Challenge, baby. Now it's Phoenix Challenge. So my question for you: you've been good at baseball your whole life. What are you bad at? What is something not necessarily a sport? What is something that you struggle with? For me, I can't ice skate. Mm-hmm. I'm horrible at it. I leave my dirty clothes around the house, which my girlfriend doesn't like. What is something that you need to improve at?
Ice skating, yeah.
Ice skating
is exactly one of those. Skate anything off the ground is a little tough for me. So.
Interesting.
No skating, no skateboarding.
Oh, okay. So like extreme sports, and that's probably, you know, D-backs obviously don't want you doing that anyway. But
D-backs are like, yes, he's bad at hang gliding. All right.
Okay, good. He's not going to be tempted by the snowmobile.
Jordan Lawler is an ass ATV rider. Right. We love to hear it.
That is the best news we've heard. Yeah. Okay. That's
like, you imagine like you're like a scouting director, you do an interview and the guy's like, yeah, I love hang gliding. Like, bungee jumping is my thing.
That was the worst possible answer.
Shit. Skydiving. All
worst possible. No. Yeah, no. It's like, no, say the, please say the opposite of that. What has been the most, what's the craziest thing you've seen on a baseball field? Whether it's been in your 9U travel ball or up here in pro ball?
Yeah, this year, actually with Bliss, Ryan Bliss, he's here.
Okay, yes.
So we were in Northwest Arkansas, second week of the season. It's extra innings, 10th inning. Uh-huh. And there's this chopper, two outs. Chopper to him. In between hop, bad hop, comes, gets it.
He's playing short.
He's at second.
He's at second, yep.
He goes in, misses it, and then it hits his knee. Hits off his knee.
Goes
to our third baseman, catches it in the air. coach is wheeling him because he's like, this ball's not going to go to the third baseman, right? So then sends him, guys out by 45 feet. And so, somehow he knees the ball to our third baseman. Third baseman throws it home.
Where is the third baseman standing? That is incredible. I'm excited to find this.
Somehow he just – there's a video of it somewhere on Twitter.
But it's like a pool shot.
Wait, where are you?
I'm watching this whole thing.
you're not even – so the ball is basically hit towards Ryan. It's hit directly. A chopper to second base. Yeah. He charges it, I guess.
It's a tough hop. Hits off his knee.
It looks like almost like a trick shot, but like defense.
Yeah, yeah. But it was nasty. It was perfect.
Wow. And to win the game. That's a tough – and if you're the base runner, you're dazed and confused.
You can't be mad if you're the hitter.
No, you're not mad.
If you're the hitter, you can't be mad because, like, you didn't really get it, right? Like, you just kind of – you chopped.
No, I'm talking about the guy that got thrown out. Because that's
the fastest guy, too. Yeah.
Oh, that's tough. That's
tough turkey, man.
Yeah, that's – okay, well, that's a great answer. That is a fantastic answer.
So I want to ask you about Corbin Carroll because I know you guys are relatively tight. What has it been like for you to see him just thrive in the big leagues at such a young age when you're kind of still going through your minor league journey? Like, are you turning the games on at night? Are you interacting with him every day? Are you still dreaming about what it's going to look like when you reach that spot and be there with him and all these other guys?
Yeah, I try to watch every game if I can. Since they're on a different time zone, we're in Texas, I can catch the last few innings every now and then. So I'll check in on that, and then obviously, I'm always rooting for him. It's exciting to see him. I know how hard he works off the field. I was with him in spring training. So,
you guys living together in spring?
We did, yeah. So, I mean, it's everything I would expect from him, honestly.
What is Corbin Carroll like as a roommate? Is he
solid dude? Yeah.
Solid. He's clean?
Solid, clean dude. Cooks.
Yeah, cooks, does the dishes? That's more important.
We all do, yeah.
Okay.
He's a good dude.
This is like that is like the most goody two shoes apartment situation ever. Jordan Lawler.
Yeah. It's like, and where Corbin are Carroll, the flaws?
They're like, you know, they get home from the game, they're like sweeping the floor, and they're like manicuring the hedges.
Was it just
like,
you two? Do we got anybody else?
We got a couple. Dominic Fletcher.
Oh, another guest, brother, of course. Angel, yeah, Thomas, yeah, yeah.
I think Dom's up there right now, actually.
Yeah, yeah, he's up there.
Ken Zone. So
double Dom. All right. Yeah. There you go.
What a crew.
What is it about Carroll, if you could just pick one thing about his game that's just like the most impressive? Because for me, just watching him since he, you know, was drafted or whatever, the power that he has is so, it's like literally stunning because it just doesn't, it's like hard to kind of process how hard and how far he's hitting the ball with both the kind of swing he has and obviously he's just not that big. So that's for me, but I don't know what do you think?
Yeah, I'd say power and then even the attention to detail. Like, he's so dialed in on what he wants to do, his game planning. So it's amazing to watch, honestly, how he goes about his business, prep to the game, all that.
He's pretty good.
Yes,
that
he is.
That guy's pretty good.
Jordan Lawler, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you have a phenomenal rest of your day.
Yeah.
Phenomenal rest of your time here in Seattle, and hopefully we'll see you in the big leagues pretty soon.
Appreciate it.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. I am Jordan. That is Jake. That is Victor Scott. Victor Scott joining us here on the show. Victor, thank you so much. Congratulations. How are you doing? You're here at the Futures game. I feel like that's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, it's super, super amazing, man. Super, definitely a blessing. Couldn't imagine that I would be here a year ago from now. So
okay, so you know what? Let's do that. Rewind a year. What's Victor Scott up to a year ago? And tell us about this very fast baseball journey that has kind of gotten you to this point, having an incredible season in the minors, in the Cardinals minor league system.
Right. So I just finished my West Virginia season, 2022, and then a couple of days later, after we didn't hear that we got the bid to go into the tournament, I drove straight to Massachusetts straight to Cotuit in the Cape Cod League, and so about this time last year, I was just finishing up then, and then I think I went to New York for a little bit and kind of chilled out there to see how that was, and then went back home, packed up my stuff at West Virginia, actually, and then drove all the way back home. So I basically traveled the whole East Coast about this time last year.
Lot of miles. So let's actually rewind a little bit more, because I want to know how a Georgia boy ends up in the land of Jed Jerko.
Yep.
Okay.
Jed Jerko Drive.
Sorry, exposed. That is a man who's clearly actually been in Morgantown a lot.
That is a man who has typed Jed Jerko Drive into Google Maps.
Okay, well, thank you. We're learning so much about Victor so quickly. Okay, so That's my question. How does that happen? Because I imagine, you know, you're in Georgia. There's a lot of different ways this happens, and recruiting is a fascinating world. So tell us, how does that happen?
So actually, I was big into basketball. So I played baseball and basketball growing up, as well as football for a year. And then I was huge into basketball. So I thought I was going to the NBA. And then my dad sat me down. Actually, both my parents sat me down and said, which one do you feel like you're going to be more impactful in? So I said, baseball. And then we kind of just started working towards that from there. And then after that, I got with the Georgia Scorpions and Heath Phillips. And then he said, man, you're a talent that no one has yet to see, really. So I got on the circuit from him or by him. And then I started to perform well after my junior summer of high school. And then that's how I kind of got my name out there. And then West Virginia was like my second offer, I believe. And I definitely told myself I want to go to like a Power 5 conference and be able to start at a Power 5 conference. So they said, man, if you work hard enough, you may have that opportunity. So God's willing, I had the opportunity to go to a place and start.
What's the cultural adjustment like? Like, because I imagine you had spent a lot of your childhood in and around like in Georgia, and Morgantown, West Virginia is a different place.
Morgantown's different than everywhere. Yeah. There's really not anywhere else you can compare it to.
So, like, freshman year, you show up on campus. Is there, like, some homesickness? Is there, like, how do you get comfortable there? I mean, your parents are in this room. I'm sure they could tell some stories, too. But, like, what's freshman year like adjusting to such a new place?
Man, when I first got there, like, I remember, like, calling my parents. I was like, well, it's a pretty cool place. Actually, like, when I first arrived, I never have seen so many hills in my life. Like the largest mountainous things I've ever seen, it was there. And like my ears popped when I was driving, and I was like, that has never happened to me ever before.
Yeah.
So I thought that was like super crazy.
This is different.
But as like a freshman, they like piled us up with so many things to do in a day. Like rather it be like lift, study hall, classes, practice. So I had so many things to do. And like, not to say I forgot to like call my parents, but I forgot
you were
to call
in.
My parents. Like I was.
You
just,
were in.
Yeah, I was had a lot of things to do, and then I ended up like calling my mom and my dad, and was like, "I am booked up right now. Like this is crazy.
Like sorry, can you put something on my schedule? I just have so much going on."
That's such a good sign when you're a parent. You send your kids to college.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you're not hearing from them, they're probably either totally fine or there's something really wrong, right? Like it's never in the middle.
But generally, I think it sounds like things were going really well. So now on the field. We were talking to someone earlier who, you know, who grew up playing in California, playing baseball in West Virginia. It's a little bit colder than it is down in Atlanta. Okay. So I imagine there's a first time where it's like, oh, now I got to try to do this and wear more layers than I normally do. So what was that first experience? Was it in fall ball? Was it in the spring? What was that like?
I feel like it was like the beginning of spring.
Okay.
So like the beginning
the
of
February, like, February yeah. season. Yeah.
When we came back home and like in January, cause we left in December, and it actually wasn't terrible. It was like manageable, but we got back, and then that's like the first time I've ever been in negative degree weather. So
fun.
It was fun.
Do you have, did you own clothes prepared for that?
Yeah, I had coats I had like ski masks and all that good stuff. And then I remember our coach saying, like, if it's below a certain temperature, we're going inside for practice.
Okay. So they
what was
there,
that temperature?
Yeah, there
that
was
temperature was 30 degrees. We practiced and it was 23 outside. And I was
you're like,
hey
coach,
I think it's 7 degrees off, you know?
Hey
we
coach.
Be inside, right?
No one wants to be that person though. Right? Like you go to the practice.
Hey, you
like,
say something. You say something.
Yeah. You wanna tell me it's 23?
Yeah, man. It was
that's
crazy.
Wild.
Crazy cold.
So how does that impact your game? Because your game is we have now, if you just go ahead, if you don't know anything, now you're listening to Victor Scott, maybe you're looking up his baseball reference page, and there's one column that stands out. This guy likes to run. This guy can steal bases with the best of them. How does that work when it's 30 degrees? Is it easier? Is it like, or is it fun because it's like, oh, I'm warming up. Like I'm actually more motivated to run because I will get, you know, gain some heat. So how does the speed element translate to when it is absolutely freezing?
Man, I would just say just be warmed up as possible. Just be loose so you're not going out there pulling any hamstrings or anything like that. So I would just say try to get out there 30 minutes prior to and really like get your heart rate up and get your blood flowing because I don't want to see anyone go out there and like pull like a hamstring of cold weather, man. Cold weather already is hard enough. So pulling a hamstring in it is even worse.
I have one more question for you. If you're going home for one weekend, what are you eating? Where are you going out to eat?
First place, Waffle House.
Waffle House.
Yep.
What has life been like for you?
In case anyone doubted he was from Georgia.
Yeah, okay, he's from Georgia. We know. Have you had access to sufficient Waffle Housery throughout your professional baseball career so far? In West Virginia, was there a Waffle House?
Nope.
No,
so it's a little too far north, man.
No Waffle House in West Virginia. No Waffle House in the Midwest League.
Yeah.
No Waffle House in the Midwest.
Yeah, there's not.
Nope. Nope. And then went to Central. I got promoted to Double A.
Arkansas. We got. Now we're
Waffle
now
House right
we're
next in, to the hotel.
Hey,
we're in business, baby.
All star meal. Yep.
Oh my God.
Mazel tov.
And then that. If you take a look at the numbers, it reflects. It reflects. The Waffle House is fueling one hell of a season for you, Victor. I have 100 more questions about being fast, but we will let you go and run away from us, run away from your dad, run away from everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. That's Victor Scott. We appreciate it, man.
No problem. Thank you.
Welcome back to the end of Baseball Barbacast. Thanks again to everyone who emailed us. Thank you in the past to Victor Scott and Jordan Lawler, who have appeared on the podcast once again. And thank you all for listening. We appreciate your support and patience and all the well wishes for my wedding, which by the time you're listening to this is already concluded, and for Jake's recent engagement, all kinds of adult happenings here for Jake and I as we have grown up over the past 10 years doing this podcast and making baseball things together. But we appreciate all the support. Thank you to Chris Tyler for producing this episode. We will be back on Wednesday with a full regular Baseball Barbacast with actual timely insight and analysis and reactions to everything happening in the baseball world. But until then, thank you for listening. We'll talk to you very soon.
SiriusXM Podcasts.